Thank you so much, Tom. I'm so thankful for the invitation to be with you this afternoon. This is my first time to be here with this congregation, and I'm glad that I could be here. I do confess, I'm sure it's because of my wife and family that I got this invitation. I know through camp and Cisco and Brady, my wife and kids have been able to be associated with that, and I know Tom has been associated with that for a long time as well. Most of the time, people in this area, I usually have to introduce myself as Denise's husband, but I am certainly happy to be that, and I am happy to be here with y'all today and to be able to look at discouragement and frustration, especially from a biblical point of view. Dear brother of mine, I mentioned I was going to be doing this lecture. He said, well, what's the topic? And I said, discouragement and frustration. And this was through text messaging. He sent me a link, and I have to share this with you. I won't mention his name, although he was one of my classmates at Southwest and is currently working in Corsicana, Texas. But he sent me a link, and if y'all are familiar with the company Geico, the insurance company Geico, and by way of disclaimer, I don't work for Geico, and I don't have Geico insurance, but I love this commercial. And it was the series, it's been months back, maybe last year, they ran this theme in these commercials where they have the guy in the suit, the Rod Sterling type, you know, and he says, can Geico really save you 15% on car insurance? Well, would a former Marine drill sergeant make a lousy therapist? And then it shows that actor that plays the drill sergeant, you know, the very familiar character. And he's sitting in there, and the guy's laying on the couch in this office. And the guy lays back there, and he says, and I guess that's why the color yellow makes me so sad. And, you know, the drill sergeant, he's sitting there taking notes, and he goes, well, you know what makes me sad? You do. You know, you remember that commercial? And he says, why don't we just take a walk down to Mamby Pamby Land and maybe we can find you some self-confidence? And then the guy's sitting there, his lips quivering, and he holds out the box of tissue. He goes, oh, tissue. And the guy goes to reach for it, and he chunks the box at him, calls him a crybaby. I have to admit, I laugh every time that I watch that. Thank you, Corey, for that idea. I laugh every time that I watch that because I know there's a part, maybe there's a part in you, but sometimes you just want to say, buck up. Sometimes you just want to say, get a grip. But then we do need to be sensitive in some respects, and we do need to understand that discouragement and frustration are a very real thing. And then I have to remind myself that sometimes when I want to just shake that other person and say, why don't you just snap out of it? And then I find myself in a discouraging situation, and I find myself being frustrated. And boy, somebody, if you even get that, if I even hear a hint of that, you know, I want to say, well, you don't know what it's like. And so there we are. As we think about discouragement and frustration, discouragement is defined, and dictionary.com defines it as an act or instance of discouraging, the state of being discouraged. So we really have to look at the verb discourage. The verb discourage is defined as to deprive of courage, hope, or confidence, dishearten, dispirit. Second definition, to dissuade, usually followed by from. Number three, to obstruct by opposition or difficulty, to hinder. And then when we look at frustration, of course, an instance of being frustrated. And so to frustrate is defined as to make, parentheses, plans or efforts worthless or of no avail, defeat, nullify. The example given, the student's indifference frustrated the teacher's efforts to help him. And I think we've all been in one of those situations. And sometimes it is that indifference that really is a heart of frustration, to disappoint or to thwart a person. So in our lesson, I want to first consider some causes of discouragement and frustration. First of all, and I was thinking of these things, and I was thinking more because there's physical things that can cause discouragement and frustration. There are, and those can be sickness, disease, and many of you know that my father is not in good health right now, and I'll touch on that. I actually will say a little bit more about that later in the lesson. But physical things, especially sickness and disease and those types of things that afflict us, will lead to discouragement, first of all, and I think frustration is really feeds right out of discouragement, because we get down physically, and then when we're not able to do those things that we want to do, we have the desire to do, and then finally we get to the point where we're just not able to do it anymore, and that leads to frustration. Also, there is our mental causes, emotional causes. This could be from other people. That can be a cause of discouragement to us. Can definitely lead to depression and lead to those aspects in our emotional state or our mental state where we find ourselves discouraged. And that, again, can lead to frustration. But then the more I thought about it, really thinking about discouragement, and yes, those are factors. Those are physical, emotional things. Those are very real things. But then also there are other causes of discouragement and frustration. And so thinking about those and really talking to others about these things, I think one of the biggest causes of discouragement and frustration is an unrealistic setting of expectations. And we will see that in some of our biblical examples. But maybe I might, as we say, have set the bar too high. Maybe I should have started out with a more realistic, you know, a small step. And you get that satisfaction of reaching that goal, and then you can raise that level of expectation. Instead of going in with really high expectations, and then you're setting yourself up for discouragement and frustration. Also, a third cause for discouragement and frustration would be improper attitude. An improper attitude on my part if I'm the discouraged or frustrated one. And I think in this case, I'm thinking along the lines of, this is when I ask God to step aside and I sit on the throne of my own heart. I think I know how to run things. I know how things ought to be. And so I kind of put God in the back seat. And I'm only setting myself up for discouragement and frustration when I do that. And then the fourth cause of discouragement and frustration, I believe, could be ignorance or just a lack of understanding. Sometimes we become discouraged and frustrated when we don't have all the facts. And so sometimes ignorance or a lack of understanding can lead to discouragement and frustration. Well, for our lesson here, I would like to look at some Bible examples and some who dealt with discouragement and frustration. If you would, turn in your Bibles to 1 Kings chapter 19. I mentioned earlier after his lesson, my good brother Sam, he mentioned Elijah and that mountaintop experience, but he didn't go into great detail. But Elijah did have a mountaintop experience. God was with him, and God gave him a great victory over the priests Baal over Ahab and Jezebel and their followers and their priests and priestesses. And so after this mountaintop experience on Carmel, and we don't have to look at that, I'm sure you're very familiar with that, but just understand the victory and realize the victory. And I try to put myself into Elijah's position, in Elijah's place following this victory. I think, boy, as a preacher, you know, he was a prophet, God's spokesman. As a preacher, I want to be God's spokesman. And what a victory that was. And you chase down those prophets, and they slaughter them there by the brook, by the river. And then he goes back up onto the mountain. You see, he does have a second mountaintop experience immediately after that, because he goes back up on top of Carmel. He bows down. Remember, because of what God had told him to do 3 years plus prior, it had not rained. Now he goes back up to the mountain and he prostrates himself there before God. And then he tells the servants, go look, what do you see? I don't see anything. Go look, what do you see? 7 times. And then he sees that speck off in the distance, and it gets bigger, and it's a cloud. Not just a cloud, but it grows into a huge, and it rains. Again, victorious. Again, what a feeling that must have been. But then he comes down from the mountain, and Jezebel, Ahab, has to break the news to her, and she says, you know, I'm going to put him through what he put my priest through. I'm going to kill him. And so the hunt is on. And again, of course, God is with him. And God leads him away. He runs for his life. But then, to come off of that great experience, I had someone tell me, you know, the thing about mountaintop experiences is when you're on top of the mountain, there's nowhere to go but down. And this person said the phrase that I heard, he said, and coming down usually happens a lot faster than going up took. And that's exactly what happens in the life of Elijah. After that great victory on Mount Carmel, he plunges to the bottom very fast. We often refer to the roller coaster of life, the ups and downs. Well, that was definitely, he fell hard, fell far and fell fast, you know, in our estimation, or as we would see it in a physical sense. But there he is out in the wilderness. And there he is. And so this goes back to Elijah's experience here and his discouragement and his frustration with the situation he finds himself in, running for his life. And as Sam pointed out, feeling like he's all alone. So much so to the point that he says, God, just, I'm done. Just go ahead, take my life. I think maybe, trying to put myself in his shoes, that maybe the expectations coming off of that great victory, and yes, that it was a great victory, and yes, we would hope to repeat those victories, but to assume that something like that is going to happen again, of course, with God with you, God can make all things, anything happen. But Elijah had these great expectations. I don't know, I can imagine, after leading some of the Israelites down and after slaughtering those false prophets, that maybe Elijah thought, this is the time right here. Maybe this is the moment. Maybe I can rally all of the nation, and we can turn our country back to God. We can get things back on the right track. Maybe some have that feeling today. But when that doesn't happen immediately, he becomes discouraged. He becomes frustrated with the situation. Another man in the Old Testament that we find dealing with discouragement and frustration in his life is the great King David. Now, David had many victories in his life. David, a man after God's own heart. And when I think about the life of David, to think as a young man, probably even still a teenager, to be anointed king over Israel, of course, done in secret because Saul still sat on the throne, but God anointed, through Samuel, went and anointed David there with his family. But then, knowing that you are the next king of Israel at such a young age, what do you think his expectations were? What was going through his mind? And then when he's sent by his father to go check on his brothers at war, and then that occasion where he sees Goliath and no one will stand up to the giant, and so he does. He stands up to that person who is calling out not just his countrymen, but is blaspheming his God and is victorious over him. But then later on, he comes and he is in, Saul takes him into the palace, into his own family. And yet, in David's life there, we find him running for his life from Saul, from God's own anointed. The discouragement and the frustration. In 1 Samuel chapter 22, 1 Samuel chapter 22, this is where David is running for his life. Saul had tried to pin him to the wall with his spear. David got out. He went back home, and remember his wife, Michal, who was Saul's daughter, put the dummy in the bed. And so Saul sends his servants to go get him, and I could just imagine them trying to push the door open, and Michael's like, he's not feeling real well right now. You might want to come back later. And they see the lump on the bed and the goat hair pillow, you know. And so they go back and tell Saul, and Saul's like, look, I don't care if you got to carry him on the bed and bring you get him back here. You know, Saul wanted him dead. And Michal helped him escape out of the window, and he flees for his life. And in chapter 22, notice that when David escaped to the cave of Adullam, that his brothers and his father's house heard of it, and they came to him. They went down there to him. But notice in verse 2, this would be a very discouraging time, a very frustrating time in the life of David. You are God's anointed, and you're on the run. You can't even stay there in the palace anymore. You can't even stay there in the capital. And the king of Israel, God's own anointed, is chasing after you and trying to take your life from you. Well, notice in verse 2, and everyone who was in distress, and everyone who was in debt, and everyone who was bitter in soul. That's the term I want to key in right there. The ESV footnotes it and says discontented, but I think we could also say discouraged, frustrated, bitter in soul, gathered to him. Gathered to who? To David, this man who's hiding out in a cave because the king is after him. And notice what Samuel records, and he became captain over them. What do we do? What can we do when we find ourselves in a situation where we are so discouraged, we are so frustrated? Well, maybe you can think about becoming a captain of the discouraged, a captain of the frustrated. And I don't say that sarcastically either. David, I'm sure, felt he did not appreciate or like the situation he was in. I'm sure he didn't like it. I'm sure he was frustrated with it. But yet, when those others who were in a similar situation, who were troubled as well, came to him, he didn't say, look, I've got my own problems. I can't deal with all of you guys right now. But no, he became their captain. And so together, that's a good lesson for us, that together we can overcome these situations and these issues that we might face. Also, think about later, after Saul is killed in battle and David, there's a struggle there. There's a struggle there between the house of Saul and David, but finally he is proclaimed king over all of Israel, and his reign was a great reign. God gave him victory after victory. The borders of Israel expanded. But then later in life, his own flesh and blood, his own son would against him. Absalom would turn the hearts of the people against and raise up a rebellion, a coup against his own father. But David, he could have said, I'm the king. He could have put his son in his place. He could have fought against him. But he realized, I would be fighting against my own flesh and blood. I would be fighting against my own countrymen. And so he leaves Jerusalem. He leaves Jerusalem with his household, with his servants, with his men who are faithful and loyal to him. Imagine the discouragement. Being God's king, being, you are King David. And the victories that you have had, the fame and renown that you have brought to Israel, the position now that your country has in the world at that time, having to run away from your own palace, having to, as we might say, tuck tail and run, but he does so. And then on your way out of town, there's the old guy throwing rocks at you, just adding insult to injury, just rubbing salt into that wound. But David doesn't lash out. His men say, we'll go take care of that guy. No, David says, no, God will handle it. Do we, when we're frustrated, when we're discouraged, do we have the sense to sit back and realize that God will take care of it? Another, that we went from a preacher to a king, we'll go back to a preacher. Obviously, that's more of my perspective now at this point in my life as well. In Jeremiah chapter 1, here we have the call of another young man. Jeremiah is young when God calls him. That's one of the excuses he makes there when God calls him, or God really heads him off at the pass, takes the excuse away from him. In verse 7, but the Lord said to me, do not say I am only a youth. For to all to whom I send you, you shall go. And whatever I command you, you shall speak. Do not be afraid of them, for I am with you to deliver you, declares the Lord. And then verse 9 and 10 is what I want to notice. Then the Lord put out his hand and touched my mouth, and the Lord said to me, behold, I have put my words in your mouth. See, I have set you this day over nations and over kingdoms, to pluck up, to break down, to destroy, and to overthrow, to build, and to plant. I was 38 years old when I went to Southwest, when I went to preaching school. I had lived a while. I had had other jobs, other occupations. I can't imagine as a young man to be told those words by God. What do you think Jeremiah's expectations are at that point? What do you think they are? I think Jeremiah, let's go set the world on fire. Let's go do this. God, in chapter 2, he says, okay, Jeremiah, in verse 2, go and proclaim in the hearing of Jerusalem. Jeremiah, this young man, he gets the call from God. He is going to proclaim God's message. God had told him how, look, they've forsaken me. I'm going to send you out among them. And then he says, you're going to Jerusalem. You know, you're going to the capital city. You're not going to be out in the little podunk towns and the little villages. No, you're going to the big city. And here's this young preacher, I imagine his eyes are as big as, you know, dinner plates. And he's like, all right, we're gonna make a difference. I'm going to make a difference. Well, what do you think Jeremiah's expectations were? And after you study the book of Jeremiah, and you come to realize why we know him as the weeping prophet, the discouragement, the frustrations that he faced in his life, but he still kept on. He continued to proclaim God's message. We need to move along here so we can get to the practical application. But one I want to look at from the Old Testament is the prophet Jonah. And the reason why I bring up Jonah was a discouraged and frustrated prophet. But his example, he's an example of one who was unjustified in his discouragement and in his frustration. So I thought it was good to point that out. In the fourth chapter of Jonah, we know how God called him to go preach to Nineveh. He didn't want to do it. He went the opposite direction. And of course, we know what happened after that. But after he gets out of the belly of that fish, and he's going to do what God told him to this time, and he goes and he preaches to Nineveh, a very short sermon, but they repented. And then we're told he goes up to the mountain and he sits down there in chapter 4, and he's all discouraged. He's frustrated. Actually, he's really expecting, he's excited at first because he's wanting a good view of the destruction. But then, when they're not destroyed, then he becomes discouraged. And he even tells God, look, that's why I didn't want to come here in the first place. Because I know you're merciful. I know if they turn back to you, you would relent from destroying them. And these are the enemy, God. And we see that discouragement and frustration on the part of Jonah, unjustifiably so. And so we see that really plays into the improper attitude that we talked to in the first point, the causes of discouragement and frustration. And we see that improper attitude. Jonah wanted his way. Jonah wanted God to do it his way. And God didn't do it his way, and he became discouraged. He became frustrated. And here's another prophet who says, just go on and kill me now. Different situation from Elijah, but the same request. And we think, why? It was improper attitude. He had the wrong attitude as well. I did want to look at some New Testament examples. The Apostle Paul, in his preaching, he had to become discouraged. Even in the first missionary journey, there in Acts chapter 12, we read about city after city where he went. And the Jews there that were not receptive to the gospel, who were trying to stop his message and stop him, run him out of town, try to kill him. They did end up stoning him there outside of Lystra. And he went on down to Derbe and then came back through Lystra and Iconium again. He didn't let that keep him from doing his job. But that discouragement there, and I try to put myself in Paul's shoes, especially as a preacher. Paul was a Jew. And remember, later he would even talk about his Jewish pedigree. He was a Hebrew of Hebrews. He was, circumcised on the eighth day of the stock of Benjamin. He was a Pharisee, according to the law, the strictest sect. And now, the Lord called to him. He repented. He was baptized. He had his sins washed away. And God said, you are my chosen vessel. And so now he's got a job. Instead of persecuting the church, now he's intent. His mission is to expand the church. And so he goes around to these towns preaching and teaching. And these Jews, remember he was a Jew, these Jews do not accept it. And they become belligerent. They become, they try to kill him. They run him out of town and they try to kill him. Can you imagine the frustration? Can you imagine the discouragement when Paul says, look at my background. But the Lord appeared to me. The Lord, he is the Christ. Jesus is the Christ. But they did not accept the message. And he became so frustrated to the extent that in Acts chapter 13, he actually tells them off. He says, look, it was right for us to come to you first. Remember Romans chapter 1, the power of the gospel to the Jew first and also to the Greek, the Gentiles. He says, look, it was right that we come to you first, but you rejected the gospel. And so now we go to the Gentiles. And he even tells them, you have judged yourself unworthy of everlasting life. Boy, he hit them pretty hard. And I imagine the frustration with Paul saying, why can't you see it? Why can't you understand this like I understand it now? Why can't you accept Jesus? He is God's Son. He is the Messiah that we've been looking for, that our fathers have been looking for. Why can't you accept that? But later he understands, and so that's why I believe in Philippians 3, that later in his life, after his missionary journeys and that journey to Rome, and he's waiting there for his court date before Caesar, and he writes the letter to the Philippians. And he says, all those things that we mentioned earlier, his pedigree, his Jewish pedigree, he says, all of that is like trash to me now. I don't look back on all that. I think Paul matured as a Christian, and so must we. And so we must understand that. And so how do we help those who are discouraged and frustrated? As I mentioned, I don't have time to go into detail, but I've dealt with this personally with my father. My family has at this point. Dealing with health trouble, with difficulties, with physical weakness, and not being able to do what you want to do, and being frustrated. And I'll admit, I would get frustrated. Dad, why don't you just try to get up and walk a little bit? It'll help. And if you do a little bit, maybe tomorrow you can do a little bit more. Found out he was severely anemic. And that was one of the problems as well, and you know, makes me feel bad. See there, the ignorance, the lack of understanding, not having all the information when I'm really making a judgment what I think my dad ought to be doing. Sometimes we fall into that situation as well. We must realize that discouragement and frustration are forms of suffering. And Christians, Paul says, you're going to suffer in this life. If you choose the Christian life, you're going to suffer. So therefore, that means we will be discouraged at times. We will become frustrated at times. We are not promised a life free of these things, but we are promised the strength to endure them. And we must stay focused on God. One passage that I would like to read when we become frustrated, Psalm 123, a very short psalm. Psalm 123, to you I lift up my eyes, O you who are enthroned in the heavens. Behold, as the eyes of servants look to the hand of their master, as the eyes of maidservant to the hand of her mistress, so our eyes look to the Lord our God till He has mercy upon us. Have mercy upon us, O Lord. Have mercy upon us. For we have had more than enough of contempt. Our soul has had more than enough of the scorn of those who are at ease, of the contempt of the proud. When we become discouraged and frustrated, we need to remember to look to God. our vision can become so clouded, and we can become so focused on what's causing the discouragement, what we're going through at the time, and sometimes we just need to lift our eyes up to the God of heaven. We must also remember that the devil will give us his best shots, but God will always make provision for us. 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 13. Well, may God bless us as we deal with discouragement and frustration. It will happen to each and every one of us. And may we look up, and also I was going to read some scriptures. May we reach out, lift up the weak hands, and help support the drooping knees. And we can overcome discouragement and frustration. God bless you, and thanks.